meeting is now being recorded.
All right, Pam, let's go ahead and get started. Good morning, folks. Good afternoon, good evening, wherever you are. Thanks for joining us on the 30th plenary call for the CCT review. I'm your host, Jonathan Zucht. Welcome to Fantasy Island. It's an old reference. In any case, we're going to talk about some of the existing papers. We're driving toward a release of this by the end of the month here, so we're in our final stages of delivering a document for public comment. Today we're going to focus on the application evaluation process papers and the safeguards papers. Before we get started, is there anyone that's on the phone that is not in Adobe Connect?
Yes, Jonathan, this is Carlos. I'm on the phone driving.
Okay. I actually see you in the Adobe Connect. But thank you for speaking up.
Okay.
I see we're missing the new head of compliance at ICANN. We'll have to speak to him about his non-compliance. But the, is there anyone who has an updated statement of interest? I'll actually have one before too long here, but not quite yet. I hope that everyone's doing well. I guess we should just launch in here. Jean-Baptiste, if you can bring up the Global South paper that you circulated this morning.
Sure, we'll do it now.
Thanks. As you, we on the most recent leadership call, we came up with a kind of a template for recommendations and also for references, and I still need to go back and find page numbers and things like that for all the citations in this paper. This is, I'm the one who holds the pen on this particular paper. I received comments from Stan, and I'm unaware of comments from anyone else. So if I miss them, please raise your hand and let me know if you have particular feedback on this document. Otherwise, we will race ahead to the recommendations in the document. So is there anybody that read this and made comments that I missed? Because as I said, all I'm aware of are Stan's. Okay, thank you. So if Jean-Baptiste, I don't have scroll control, but if you do, if you can just scroll down to the bottom to where the recommendations begin, I think that's the meat of our discussion. Oh, now I have it. Does everybody have it, or am I able to scroll on your behalf?
Everyone has it now.
Okay. So, if folks would, if you scroll down basically to the bottom of, they're not numbered. Oh, bottom of page 6, I believe, where it says recommendations. I hear people's mouse wheels going. So you should see recommendations in blue and then the first recommendation. Okay, so this might be the most controversial one, and so I wanted to definitely have a discussion about this. I've also expanded on the template for recommendations a little bit, and I don't know that it's necessary that everyone do that in time for this particular draft release for public comment, but some of the commitments we made at the outset included measures for success, and so I've added that to the template as well. and some interested in people's feedback on that formulation and things like that as we go forward, because mine right now is the only one I think that's formatted that way. So the very first recommendation I have is actually to set objectives for applications from the Global South. If you recall, many of the conversations that took place at the last ICANN meeting was in review of the findings of the applicant survey from Nielsen and the cohort survey from AM Global. And there was quite a bit of discussion about whether it is ICANN's objective or not to reach out to the Global South, and whether or not expanding the application pool from the Global South is an organizational objective. What I'm not sure of is whether or not this team has consensus about us making a recommendation on that particular fact. And so this particular recommendation, and Megan, I see you there. I'm just going to finish my thought before I lose it. On this particular recommendation is about, in a sense, creates the framework for the other ones. In other words, many of the recommendations are only recommendations if it becomes a priority of the organization to reach out to the Global South. And so that's the phrasing of this, and I put this in the hands of the GNSO. Megan, go ahead.
Sorry, I had to unmute my mic. Thanks, Jonathan. I like the idea. I'm just a little bit concerned about the way it's referred to and the way it's set, because I'm a bit concerned that if we say set objectives for applications, there will be some number that is established, and then if that number is not met, people will say that the whole business can't go forward, or we don't have enough applications from, Africa or Latin America or wherever it may be. So I wonder if it wouldn't be better, and I'm not fussy about the words exactly, to say set goals for increasing applications or something like that. That's my only concern with the word objectives. Otherwise, I like the idea. And then I have another fussy complaint, and I know Goran wants to call ICANN, which is a corporation, he wants to call it an organization and wants to separate it from all such other things. But please, let's not in this text, which is supposed to be legally correct, when we want to make a recommendation to ICANN, it's not ICANN organization. Goran can call ICANN whatever he likes, but legally it's a corporation. So if it should say to ICANN, it means ICANN, the corporation. So let's just say to ICANN. I've said this a couple of times, and I know staff probably is supposed to call ICANN organization. You're welcome to, of course, but it's, in our context, I think we should just say ICANN, or ICANN board, or ICANN staff,
okay,
or whatever it is we're referring to, or a specific community. Okay?
Well, I'm happy to change to ICANN. The times that I've made reference to it were times when I meant staff. Probably, because it seemed more like an implementation-oriented recommendation. People should feel free to disagree with my designation as well. But as far as how it's worded, ICANN is fine or ICANN staff is fine. So I was just drawing a distinction between ICANN the organization, ICANN the community. But I'm used to calling what I run an organization, even though it is technically a corporation because it's a nonprofit, as is ICANN. So that might just be an Americanism, Megan, but we can certainly switch it to say just ICANN or something. But back up to the top, I guess I'd like to open this up for some conversation. My recommendation was, in fact, to set numeric objectives, because I'd like to, that does not necessarily mean that the program needs to be held up or anything like that, and we can be specific about that, but the idea simply being that we want to set some benchmark to judge the success of these efforts at expanded outreach. So the idea is that, hey, you know, we got X number of applications from Global South in the initial round here, and in subsequent procedures, we're going to set objectives, and I don't have a way to do that because we don't actually know what the structure of subsequent procedures are going to look like. And so that's why I was partly punting that to them. But I think having a numeric, a measurable objective is a good one, and it doesn't need to say the whole program was a failure, but it could suggest that more or enough has been done in outreach efforts. And so that's why I worded it that way. But I welcome more discussion on this notion about whether to set a numeric objective. But that's my inclination.
Okay,
Calvin,
can I
go ahead.
Just one second. Two things are interjected. My only concern, I like the idea of objectives or goals or whatever. My concern really relates to where it says must be completed prior to subsequent rounds. Yes. So it's setting the objectives that have to
be setting the objectives that need to be completed prior to subsequent rounds.
Not achieving
the
objectives.
Correct. That's exactly right. So the recommendation is to set objectives. That's right.
But we don't have to achieve the objectives in the subsequent rounds.
Not at all. In fact, this decision is about whether to implement the other objectives that may, the other recommendations, which are attempts to address this issue if a commitment comes out of the organization to do so.
Okay, here.
Calvin, go ahead.
Yes, I think my question, or the question in my mind, is what constitutes an application from the Global South? Because an application can be made up of various components. So you could have the registry operator coming from the Global South and a European applicant. Now, does that count as a Global South application?
We know what an applicant is, right? An applicant.
Yeah.
And so I think the idea here is that it's about applicants from the Global South. Now, how they're handling their back-end services, et cetera, is not the issue as so much as the applicant itself is an organization from the Global South.
So is it okay to have a whole bunch, I don't know, let's say 50 applicants, 50 applicants from the Global South all running on foreign technology or Global North infrastructure?
I'm not the one to give the answer, and obviously that might be part of the exercise, right? But in my mind, I think leveraging infrastructure that's available from the Global North is not the end of the world. But we can also suggest we can either break this up or add more detail to this recommendation that includes the question that you're asking. What I don't know is whether or not we have a well-defined opinion about that ourselves, or if in fact we're encouraging the organization set objectives. And so in some ways that's left vague, because if it's not rounds anymore, then having a round based figure for how many new applications there should be, you know, would be problematic. And the question you ask is a good one. But again, are we being asked to make a decision about whether or not infrastructure is required for competition from the Global South?
I ask this, I know, because in my experience, often it's seen as if there isn't a skills transfer to local organizations, it's seen as a recolonization type issue particularly in the political arena. I don't see it so much in the technology field, but in the political arena, it definitely tends to be viewed as a recolonization type thing. So, you know, are we trying to make political points here? Are we... anyway, it's a difficult topic, I think.
Well, and
I would like to make a comment, Jonathan.
Looking at our... Okay, Carlos, sorry. I'll call on you next. Just to react to what you're saying, Calvin, I think that's something about which to be concerned, but it's very difficult for me to imagine that reforms to the application and evaluation process would have objectives related to non-applicant activity, right? So back in registry services providers, et cetera, or resellers. Instead, I think the place to begin is whether or not the entrepreneur themselves that's trying to create a business model in the Global South is making use of whatever resources are available, because even those numbers were almost non-existent in the initial round. I open it up for discussion, but I think having the person driving the application be from the Global South feels like progress to me. Carlos, please go ahead.
Thank you, Jonathan. This is an interesting discussion. I would prefer that we remain focused on general objectives and the welfare of the users. I know it's very difficult to come to grips, because we can easily end up in the same discussion we had with the community applications that cannot be solved because the objectives are so difficult to define, but I think we should avoid remaining at the applicant's level and at the very technical level. And if we ask the question, as it was suggested before, if the corporation or if the community sets objectives for underserved areas, they should be careful to define very, very clearly what the measurement or the conditions should be for the welfare of the users in underserved areas, period. Very general, but specific. I mean, if you are going to jump into that area, be careful to set very clear targets so as to avoid this wishful thinking of the community applications that it would be nice if this community gets together, but in the end they never get together, you know? I don't know if my point
That's
was
right.
clear, but...
So let me ask this question. If we expand the details to include those questions that should be asked by the subsequent procedures working group, does that meet your objectives, or do folks on this call believe that we need to answer those questions?
No, we should just make the warning that if the community decides to go into these questions, they should be very clear and not get muddled through like it happened in the last round, not only for the Global South, but for community applications. I see a big danger
right
there, that we express wishful thinking, but we never get to term. And we should learn both from the failure of the Global South applicants, but also for the failure of the community application, and remain at the level of consumer welfare and not get too technical. If we can draft something like that, I would support like putting the warning, because we have to recognize the fact that there weren't enough applications of the Global South and the process was not clear enough for community applications. We should keep that in mind.
Okay, so I have a details section that is the next section down, if you can see, which is another section I added to the template, where I think I could put information about a little bit more detail about those questions, so I will make a note, or hopefully staff is making a note and will remind me to expand the details section of this recommendation. And to include addressing the questions that you raised. Does that make sense? Wado, go ahead.
It makes sense to me.
Lotto, I can't hear you. You might be on mute. Lotto? We can't hear you.
Hello?
Yes, there you
Hello?
Are.
You can?
I can hear you now.
Okay, okay. Yeah, I wanted to suggest, yes, I'd like to suggest a bit of addition to one of your detailed recommendations, or this one on outreach. I think is the second one. Outreach to the Global South requires more comprehensive program of conference participation, etc. I would guess that we have another activity added there, which should be identification of specific potential applicants. If you recall, like when AM was doing the survey, they actually had an activity of identifying specific potential applicants who kind of matched what kind of applicants that we had from the Global North. So I would have suggested that we also have such an exercise so that this outreach can be also targeted to, it could be part of the outreach program to at least identify some highly potential applicants. And then they can be targeted specifically rather than just having an outreach program which is general. So I wanted to add that there. Hello?
Thanks, Lotto. I've muted myself. I've muted myself because I was blowing my nose. So thank you. Does anybody else have an opinion on that recommendation? Obviously, such a recommendation has the beginnings of an implementation from the top part of the AM Global report, where they've identified cohorts throughout the Global South. They didn't reach out to all of them, but they did identify a list, so there is at least the beginning of that effort. Do other folks have an opinion, one way or another, on that portion of the recommendation? Aliza, I see your hand up.
Hi, Jonathan. Thanks. I actually don't have an opinion on that. I wanted to raise something that had to do with the mechanics of the recommendations, but I wanted to wait until I can wait until this conversation is complete.
Okay, thanks, Aliza. Obviously, I've messed with the template a little bit. So,
that's what I want to raise.
All right. Anyone have thoughts on Watto's recommendation? Maybe if you're in Adobe Connect and you agree with Watto's recommendations, you can put in a green check mark. How's that? Does everybody know how to do that? All right. Is everybody finding where to do that? I want to make sure that you're... Is there anyone with strong objection to incorporating that into the recommendation? Megan, does your note imply that you didn't hear Watto's suggestion? All right, just for Megan's benefit, Watto's suggestion here in recommendation 2 was to, in the details section of this expansion of the outreach program, it would include a specifically compiling lists of likely applicants, you know, based on the kind of cohort strategy that AM Global employed, and making sure that they are part of the outreach efforts. Okay, excellent. All right, so staff, please make a note that I'll incorporate that into the recommendation. And then now, Aliza, now you've had a chance to see me go through two of these. Did you want to bring up your template issue?
Sure. I just wanted to raise that if we wanted to change the template for the recommendations, that we should make a note to all of the pen holders to do that to their papers, because we're starting this week to format the papers and citations, and we've asked our in-house designer to come up with a sort of a graphical way to represent each of these recommendations. So we'd like to have them all be in a consistent style and format. So if everyone is on board with Jonathan's changes, then I just wanted to point that out and ask the pen holders who are on this call to adopt this new format in their paper.
So that's in fact a question. How are people feeling about the template as I have it presented? What I found was that recommendation as a bullet point wasn't enough to provide enough guidance for implementation. And I recall from our charter that we were trying to include measures for success. So do people feel good about adding the details section and the success measures section to their potential, to their recommendations?
Kelvin supports it.
Yeah, I guess you can remove your green tick if you don't agree with it, and add one if you do, and we'll see if you're comfortable with that the template as I've modified it. It's one of those things that it made sense when we were laying it out, but as I was trying to fill it out, it felt like it needed more. Anybody have any questions about the format or concerns about it?
Jonathan?
Yes, Maggie, go ahead.
Could I come in for a second? Thanks.
Welcome.
I don't have any concerns about the format. Pardon me?
I said welcome aboard.
No, I don't have any concerns. Thank you. I'm back. I don't have any concerns about the format per se. I'm just concerned that it's a complete waste of our time. And quite frankly, I'm not sure if ever I'll be able to rewrite all of this again in this perfect format. I suggest that it's done by a single editor. Someone take the pen and just stuff it all into the standardized approach. I think all the information that we need is in all the documents that have been prepared. And we're just going to have to do another re-editing if each of us goes our own way again. I'm sure there's some element, some positive element in having it in the right order by each of us and then redoing it again later. But in the interest of time, I think we would be much more efficient and faster to just take what we have now and have one single editor from ICANN staff, probably, to put it all into the right format. It would make the draft look much better as well, I think.
Yeah, Megan, thank you. You mentioned that on the email. I guess my concern there is I think there's a distinction between straight-up formatting and sort of the checklist of things that need to be covered. And so if somebody's deriving the details of a recommendation from the paper, they may not be in a way that you agree with. And so that's the only hesitation, is that this is probably the most important part of the document in many respects, and I think that there's a strong feeling by just about everybody that should not come from staff per se, right? So the question then becomes where to draw that line. So I think the key is, Megan, is just to make sure you have enough detail in your recommendations so that, in fact, they could be implemented. And if you do, they can be reorganized by staff into whatever format makes sense. But I think the issue is to make sure that there's a rationale for the recommendation, that there's the notion of whether or not it needs to be completed before there are subsequent procedures, and enough implementation detail and measures of success. So it's a structure in one hand, but it's really a set of requirements for a recommendation, if that makes sense. And I think that at its core, that data needs to come, that content needs to come from the team. Does that make sense?
Okay. Yeah, that makes sense. In that case, I will on
you
just
write a paragraph that has all of this information in it. I'm happy to ask staff to put it into this standardized format.
What
we need to make sure the data is there.
Yeah, what I was going to suggest is the following. If someone from staff will send me most recent versions of the documents that I've done, because I must say I'm completely lost in all these iterations and revisions and Google Documents and God knows what, in a Word version so that I can redo it and add and review them properly, I'm happy to make any minor adjustments that are necessary to make it fit into this additional requirement. That I don't mind doing. I'm just not ready to spend the time or energy to redo it in a completely new version. That's all I'm saying. I think along with some others, we're getting CCC fatigue in the sense that I think almost everyone has other full-time jobs that they're doing, and so.
Yep. We all do. Exactly.
Of course, but I think in the most efficient and effective means. So, as I said, if someone can give me the most recent version in a Word document, I'm happy to update and make any minor additions that are necessary to put it into those additional aspects that you've mentioned.
Excellent.
Okay?
Yeah, it's the aspects. It's the content that matters, Megan. We can work on the formatting. Staff can work on the formatting, but it's the content that really matters. So someone from staff hopefully has taken it as an action item. I'd probably jump at least to get the most recent version of Megan's documents back to her in Word format for editing of the recommendations. Okay. Is it fair to say that we have consensus on recommendation number 2 here? Excellent. So recommendation number 3 has to do with a program that I only discovered when I got very serious about drafting, which was a pro bono assistance program that was part of the applicant support program as well. So there was ICANN compiled a list of volunteer consultants and a list of people that applicants for that pro bono consulting. And that's it. And so those lists exist, but we have no understanding of what the interaction was between them, whether or not anybody actually received any pro bono assistance or how it went or anything like that. And so the given that there was feedback from in the AM Global report with respect to getting help and consulting, and that appears to remain an important function for the application evaluation process. And so the recommendation I put here is basically having ICANN manage the pro bono assistance program. And my rationale is, despite the registration of both volunteers and applicants, there's no evidence of interaction. And then that's a footnote 1 for some reason. So this recommendation goes to ICANN staff, and it should be completed prior to subsequent rounds. In other words, the construct of this pro bono program. And then the idea is that the ICANN staff would manage this program to ensure communication is successful between the volunteers and the applicants. And both the volunteers and applicants should be sort of surveyed by ICANN in real time on the success of the interaction so that future reforms can be based on feedback. So one of the things we did was reach out to every one of the volunteers and every one of the applicants for help, and we got 0 responses from anybody. The program makes a lot of sense, but we literally have 0 data about its success. So this is about it being more than just a web page and being a actual sort of managed matchmaking program complete with some kind of review in real time of how it's going. So I welcome feedback on that. Jamie, go ahead.
Thanks, Jonathan. Sorry, I was having trouble getting off mute. On this recommendation, I think it would be helpful, at least for staff, to have a little bit more clarity around what manage means.
Okay. Yeah, I mean, I don't have a great answer, but I'll try to flesh that out more. But I guess it probably means that initial communication comes through ICANN staff, and that staff gets back to both the volunteer and the applicant to see whether or not successful communication took place.
So that's more. Go ahead.
Sorry, go ahead.
I was going to say maybe it's more of a coordination role, because manage implies a more active management of resources and activities, and ICANN can't
right.
really force people into much as we try. We can't really force people into doing things. That was a joke.
Yeah, so maybe a more active coordination role and reporting role. So we'll change manage to coordination. I think I'm comfortable with that. Calvin?
Yeah, I find this interesting because this is really the first I heard of this process or these resources. So maybe. You know, some more salesmanship or growing of the company here is necessary.
And that's right, Calvin. And presumably, this program would be part of the expanded outreach program that's created by staff. But ironically, there were some 20 volunteers and some 30 applicants for help. And so it's an amazingly larger number than there were applicants. And so it's a very interesting, part of the applicant support program that I wasn't even aware of and that, as near as I can tell, didn't go anywhere. But that, again, that could be that, communication, some greater coordination of communication. So there wasn't, in other words, there wasn't a complete lack of awareness of this service of these volunteers, but there seems to have been a lack of execution within that program.
Okay. Interesting.
Wado. Wado, I think you're on mute.
Okay, now you can hear me?
Yes, I can.
Hello?
I can hear you now.
Yeah, this program that you mentioned, the pro bono program, you say that it's not known much what came of it. Would it not be in order for some, for us to recommend some checking back to find out exactly what happened about this program.
Yes, unfortunately, Wado, no one knows. The number of people that were surprised by the existence of this program is greater than it should have been. But as far as we know, there was just a form that you filled out to put your name on a list of volunteers and a form that you filled out to put your name on a list of people desiring support. And that was the extent of the program. And, but even so, there were 20 of each or something like that. I'll go back and look at it. But there was no follow-up or coordination of that program, and so there's no one inside the ICANN organization that has any further details about, what happened here. And we, in fact, tried to reach all of the volunteers and all of the applicants for support and got no response. So those emails may be old at this point. People may have moved on. So I guess at the core of this is a reporting function to better understand how the system is working so that any future reforms of it could be, you know, data-based, which they cannot be now because we literally have zero data, other than the fact that there was interest. And I think that that's significant in and of itself, and that interest seems bigger than the number of people that ultimately applied from the Global South. So I feel like it's a positive thing that there was interest, unfortunately there's absolutely no evidence of success or failure of this program.
Yeah, but what I meant, why don't we recommend for, like, a study or a check to find out really what happened? A report can be generated. What happened about this program? Because we are recommending, like, for something to proceed from it, but we don't know what happened.
Right. I mean, no one knows. I think we're starting over with trying to put ICANN staff into a more proactive coordination role so that we can make reforms along the way. There's, as far as I know, literally no one, except maybe David Taylor, who has his hands up, who has any sense of what transpired with respect to this program. David, do you have some experience?
Yeah, I have to say, can you hear me okay, Jonathan?
Very, very faint. Is there any way to increase the volume on your microphone?
Sorry, I had this problem before, didn't I? Is that better?
Not really.
Any better?
Not really.
Okay.
I can hear my echo louder than I can hear my echo louder than I can hear your voice.
Is that better?
Much better, thank you.
Can you hear me now?
Thank you.
Good. Okay.
Yeah.
I can't remember what I was going to say. No, I actually do remember this program coming up because I'll try and find some of the correspondence on it. Because we did quite a bit of pro bono work as a firm, we considered putting ourselves forward for it. So I did have a little think about that, and then I suddenly thought, if we're not careful, we'll be inundated, because I wasn't quite sure how it would work. And so we didn't, and there were so many things going on with applications, etc., that we didn't. I was just going to say, or just add to that, because I agree with your recommendation as it is. Actually, I think that's exactly the way we should be saying this, because it's something which, given the number of people who were there and sort of volunteered to assist, it's surprising it didn't get more traction at the end of the day. So I think your, you know, success measure and details there you've got in the recommendation makes complete sense. And I was just going to, because Calvin was talking about this, I just wondered whether he knew... there's a South African one there, My Next Mail Pty Limited. You can find them on there, and they were offering technical help and consulting, etc., for writing applications. So I just wonder whether Calvin knew of them, and if we've got an issue there with their email being down, it might be something he could just reach out and we could get some at least anecdotal evidence of that, which might help guide us a little bit more to what to do next time.
I'm having a look right now.
Calvin, does he speak a bell? Sorry, what
I'm having a look right now as you speak.
All right, thank you. Jamie, is that an old hand?
Yeah, it is. Sorry.
All right, Wado, go ahead. You're back on mute, Wado. Wado? We still can't hear you.
In the world, you put a success measure. Should that not be the recommendation?
Please start over again, Wado. We can hear you now.
Yeah, I'm asking, you have put success measures. It's actually answering what I was asking about. So should that not be the recommendation rather than the success measures? Did you hear me?
Yes, I hear you. Thank you, Wado. I debated that myself. And as I wrote it in details, it sounded like it was a mechanism for measuring success. And so I put it there. I don't know that it's the material where it lands, but I can move it up into details and then try to define some more objective measure of success ourselves. But thank you. Calvin?
Okay. Just a quick answer to David's query. The Monex Mail guys are actually looking or seeking support, not offering support. So it looks like they're in the seeking support section. But yeah, it's an interesting list that I wasn't aware of. Thanks.
Well, Calvin, if you know of any way to reach out to them, I'd still be interested to hear from people seeking support, because we wrote to all the email addresses in both groups and didn't get a response from any of them.
We'll definitely try and reach out then.
Thank you. Any other questions about this recommendation? Do we have consensus from the team to go forward with it? Excellent. Final recommendation is about the applicant financial support program. There are only three applicants for support. I think that this is aimed at the subsequent procedures working group. Again, I have it, the completion prior to subsequent rounds is depends based on that very first recommendation about setting objectives. And what I put here is that the total cost of applying for a new string exceeded the application fee. There are efforts underway to reduce the application fee for all applicants, which will have oversized implications for the Global South. But beyond that, we should be looking at efforts to reduce the overall cost of application, including additional subsidies and dedicated support for underserved communities. I welcome enhancements to how that's described or what that recommendation should look like. Calvin, is that a new hand?
Old hand, I'll take it down now.
Okay. So my, I guess my finding here in the document is twofold, that not enough people knew about the program itself, not enough people knew about the applicant support program, and that there was not enough of an understanding of the actual cost associated with being an applicant. And so most of the indictments of the applicant support program seem to have to do with outreach more so than the support program itself. But if people have specific recommendations for the support program itself, then now's the time to bring them up. But basically, it's a recommendation to revamp this program and look at the broader spectrum of costs associated with being an applicant. Wado, go ahead. Wado, we can't hear you yet. Wado?
Is that correct? It's applied only to the community applicants?
No. It's not applied only to community applicants.
To all applicants. So it applies to all applicants from the Global South?
That's right.
Okay. Okay, thank you.
Is it confusing that I put underserved communities?
No. I was thinking that it only applied to community applicants.
Yeah, I don't think so.
Okay.
As far as I understood, there weren't any successful applications for support. So the three that did apply were all unsuccessful, if I remember correctly, which makes it even more of a... I beg your pardon?
I thought one was successful.
Interesting. I'm not sure. I'd be curious to...
I thought there was one successful.
Okay. That's kind of good.
But we can... Are what you're getting at is the idea that we need to revisit the evaluation portion of that program to make sure that it's not unfairly excluding applicants?
That may be an idea. I remember, I think we looked at it very briefly and decided that it was for us a complete waste of time when we were doing our Joburg, Durban, Cape Town and South Africa applications. But then I wasn't involved in the decision-making process on that. But I do remember that something like we thought it just wouldn't be successful concentration of efforts.
I see. I would love greater specificity about that, if there's anyone you can reach out to about that, so that we can make a more specific recommendation.
I can maybe speak to the guys in our team. They're getting back in the next day or two. He would have handled that section, and I'll see if I can give you input on that.
Okay, great. Thank you, Calvin. Megan, please go ahead.
Yes, thanks, Jonathan. Well, I just wondered if it's useful in being even a bit more specific in the details.
Always.
Now I'm putting you on the spot. Because, you know, there's been a lot of discussion about, for example, now Jamie will probably jump out of his seat when I say this, but using new GTLD auction proceeds and supporting the Global South with SAF, et cetera, et cetera. But I wonder, in that context, is it not better to do what you said? You say the total cost far exceeds 185,000 application fee, and then you say efforts to reduce the application fee. Shouldn't the recommendation really be even more detailed in the sense of analyzing whether that application fee was necessary, how far it offsets costs, and then have a gradation of costs that relate to, I don't know, not the GDP of the country the person's from, but the financial situation of the company that's involved. I mean, there are ways and means of doing this, and obviously you don't want to go into all the details here, but someone should do a proper, thorough assessment of how the financial support program works better and be more effective.
I think I'm trying to put that in the hands of the subsequent procedures working group.
Okay, is that what it says? Must be completed prior to subsequent rounds? Depends.
Well, the reason I have it is depends is because, again, I think it's linked to whether or not it's a community objective to increase the number of applications from the Global South.
But you've already said that. So that's our recommendation. You're presuming that they have to agree on that.
That's right. That's all depends means. So again, I welcome any feedback if you think that's maybe I should put depends on recommendation one or something like that, which I can do. That was sort of what I was basing that on, is that these are all given the notion that we want to increase the number of applications from the Global South and that is an organizational goal or community goal. Here are some recommendations for doing it.
Why don't you just then put it subject to adoption and agreement by the community of recommendation one?
It's also possible that the subsequent procedures folks will want to determine that it's an ongoing effort as opposed to something that is a prerequisite to subsequent procedures. In other words, it's it's something that could be happening in parallel to subsequent procedures as opposed to completely front-loading it. Then you don't run out of time the way you did before and things like that. So I don't know if people have a strong opinion about that, but I think the argument could be made that an overall objective increasing applications from the Global South could be happening in parallel to subsequent procedures.
Absolutely. But I think, that's a question of how you phrase it, I think, more than anything else.
All right. So I'll take another. I'll revisit depends. Calvin, go ahead.
Yeah, it's kind of coming back to me now on that subsidy issue, but I'll still check with the rest of the team and just confirm. Basically, you get points for how financially secure you are or your application is, and I think it might have been that basically it's counterintuitive. So if you are trying to collect as many points as you necessary by supplying all these guarantees and so forth, and then you go and apply for assistance, it kind of is self-defeating there, if I remember correctly. But again, I will have a chat with the guys tomorrow and see what they say.
Thanks, Calvin. That's good feedback. Wado, the reason that I added the word financial is because I've broken up the applicant support program into pieces. So, for example, the pro bono assistance program is also part of the applicant support program. So this recommendation simply has to do with the subsidy portion of the applicant support program. Does that make sense? Thanks. Megan, that's an old hand. Okay. All right, so I have some marching orders in terms of making some revisions to this document that hopefully staff have captured. And so at this point, I would like to hand over the phone to Megan to go through her recommendations from her documents, which are also part of the application and evaluation process.
Oh, my goodness. Okay, I'm happy to do that. Does someone have them in front of them to put onto the screen? I sent them quite some time ago, I think in one of these horrible Google documents. And I see that Jean-Baptiste has very sent me back all my documents again. But
sorry, Megan, can you confirm which document you would like to start with?
Of the ones that you just sent me. I think there's only one that's on application and simplifying the process. There's, application, I think it must be called simplifying the process. I don't think I did simplifying the process, that's for sure. I did something on the, let me just have a look. Specific communities, is that it? On specific communities, perhaps is that one? Let me just have a look. I have a separate file here for me. Sorry, you caught me off guard. I didn't realize I was supposed to be going through this. That's all. Why don't you go on to something else in the interim while I quickly find what I had done in application and... Yeah, the things related to the application process, yes, that's right. They all relate to what was originally called string contention. And then we changed that to call it something not entirely string contention, but objections to, let me see how we call it, effectiveness of the string contention progress, but I changed the title of that, and preventing delegations that would be confusing or harmful. I had changed the title of those. These are not the most recent versions, at least not the versions that were in the not in the Google document.
That's the one from the Google Doc.
There we are. Effectiveness of the dispute resolution process for formal suit. That's it. That's the correct one. Thanks. Okay, so a lot of the comments that have been put in here are no longer relevant. For example, this one that says need to define string contention process, because this is no longer string contention. It's now effectiveness of the dispute resolution process for formal string objections. And I hope David's left. Drop, because this is something that David and I were supposed to do together, and I haven't really had a chance to have any comments or contributions from David, unfortunately. He's been doing a whole series of other things, so I was hoping he'd have a look at this with us, but he's not. I see he's just dropped off the list. So everything, I think it was Stan who said we need to define string contention. That's not necessary anymore. And these other comments about why not describe them, et cetera, those are all described below, so I don't think we have to pay attention to those. And then the paragraph is confusingly written. Well, that's possible. I don't say it's not. Someone was confused, obviously. So I'm happy to have someone rewrite it in a clearer way. But I think, aside from that, I don't seem to be able to scroll up and down either. There we are. Thank you. So now I'm on the next page. So this is just a description of the different kinds of dispute resolution processes there were for formal string objections. So I've changed that so that it fits exactly the vocabulary that's used by the evaluation and application guidebook. And then I had this comment in yellow, which says the ICDR cases. Oops. There's an echo. And then someone has very usefully put the link in there of the objection cases, but I don't know if that means that we should just use that as a footnote. That's probably the best thing instead of an entire listing. So I'm not quite sure what else we need to do here, except for cleaning it up and, of course, putting in the additional aspects that Jonathan has asked for, and changing the recommendation.
Megan, do you have the recommendations separated out someplace so that we could just go through them and make sure we have
the recommendations are in bold. The recommendations in bold. Is it page 2? Page, I think it's the second or third page. Let me just have a look. 1, 2. On the third page is the recommendation in bold. The problem was that there was inconsistency of outcomes in a number of string confusion objections. And the argument that this could be avoided in future by ensuring that all similar cases of plural versus singular strings were examined by the same expert panel, or by determining in advance that strings would not be delegated for singular plurals of the same GPLD, and that all such similar applications would be resolved either by negotiations between the parties or by ICANN options. Whatever the option is chosen should be made clear in the application evaluation guidebook in advance. So that's effectively the recommendation there.
So there's just the one recommendation from this document.
Well, if you like, I can cut it out into more, because the other one says future GTLD launches should ensure that this aspect is adequately planned in advance, clear rules are established, consistently followed. I mean, those are, if you like, sotto voce recommendations, in the sense that, for me, it's stating the obvious, but it's clear that they could be transformed into a recommendation.
So let's just open a discussion here. Do we think that there's sufficient detail in this recommendation that it could be implemented? And who is the target of this recommendation? Megan, do you have a target in mind for the recommendation?
Well, some parts are obviously...
Recommendation is two?
Yeah, I do. I was waiting for the others to chime in. Certain parts could be done by ICANN staff, obviously, and that relates to the application and evaluation guidebook. And the reason things changed and arose later was obviously because it was a new process, things were done along the way. I think now things are much clearer, and those can be clarified and improved and revised in the application evaluation guidebook. So those aspects here could be done by ICANN staff. Some aspects have to be done by the PDP group in determining the terms and conditions of any new GTLD process. Notice I didn't use the bad word. So that could be clarified a bit more in a new version of the recommendation.
Comments for the rest of the team? Are there any objections to this recommendation? Do we have consensus about it? Okay, so we'll assume this is good going forward. Megan, you're going to just...
I'm going to transform it into your preferred approach and clarify a little bit to whom the recommendations are addressed and separate out clearly what's recommendation and what's nice to have, etc.
Exactly. Aliza.
Thanks. Hi, Megan. So I had a question. Is there another version of this paper? Because there's a number of comments in here, some that came from my colleagues and from myself regarding how some of these objections and contentions are characterized. Have you been able to address those?
Well, I changed the terminology, rightly so, because it's no longer string contention. It's now effectiveness of the dispute resolution process and not string contention per se. So those are addressed. And then there are a whole series of other comments that were made. But I'm not sure if those are intended to be put in as footnotes. For example, here's one, comment 8, maybe worth noting. AGB provided standards for string similarity panel. The standards of review for string confusion did not require the same standards that the string similarity panel had to use, leading to differing results. But I don't see that that's inconsistent with the recommendation, which is that the evaluation and application guidebook should be improved, clarified, etc.
I mean, those comments are really just to provide more context to your prose, not necessarily to sway your recommendation one way or another. Although, if you want to make a recommendation regarding the applicant guidebook, I think that's you know, it's important to note what was included in the applicant guidebook, and if you feel that there was something missing, this would be the place to raise that.
Yeah, I didn't say that things were missing. I said it should be clarified. What did I say exactly?
Or clarified.
I can't see it now, but it's in there somewhere. And then the other question, Aliza, that was raised is string similarity review is based on visual similarity. And string confusion objection is not bound to visual similarity. That's a comment that someone put in, maybe you or one of your colleagues.
Yeah, that came from one of my colleagues. So the point there was that the objections were not only evaluated by based on the question of visual similarity, but on other, you know, other issues. So it was trying to differentiate the.
But I don't think I referred specifically to visual similarity. I used one specific case of plural versus singular, where there were clear misunderstandings, and not misunderstandings, there were clear differences of approach, let me put it that way, clear differences of approach in very similar circumstances. Let's put it that way. That was the one area where there were, let me put it this way. If you were to take all the same cases of plural and similar and put them together, you would expect to have a consistent and similar resolution of similar problems, and that wasn't the case. For all the others, I think they were relatively clear. My point on those was that the application and evaluation guidebook could perhaps clarify now in a new version where issues have arisen, how they could be resolved, and what to avoid in the future. So perhaps that's a way of making that recommendation a little bit punchier so that it divides more clearly the two cases. Or plurals and singulars and all others, let me put it that way.
Right, so I think that's a fine recommendation. I think that would be a policy recommendation. I think we're just the point was just to try to differentiate between, you know, the initial evaluation and then the objection process. So there were different standards there, and I thought it might be worth noting that.
Yeah, but I did say that this addresses only the post-ICANN evaluation dispute resolution. It says somewhere at the beginning that it says somewhere in the beginning of the text that this is only dispute resolution carried out after the initial assessment done by ICANN staff. Because there was an initial assessment done by ICANN staff. Right?
That's correct, yeah.
Exactly. So this is only those post-internal assessments, or pre-assessment, let's put it that way. So that, I thought that was clear in here, but I'll try to change that as well. Okay, so clarify post-ICANN evaluation, and I'll divide the recommendations into plural and singular and all of it.
And I'm happy to discuss with you offline, Megan, so that we don't take up everyone's time on this one issue. I just thought it might be helpful to go through a couple of the comments.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Jonathan, I don't know if you have comments from anyone else.
Not on this document, I don't think. Do you have any other documents related to the application evaluation process?
There was also the one on GAC early warning advice and GAC advice. So maybe, I don't know who's managing the machine. That's part of the application. Is it possible to make that a little bit bigger? Because I have my glasses on, but they're obviously not good enough to read that as well as possible. That's better. Thank you.
Megan, you want to tell us where to go to jump ahead to the recommendations?
Good question. Where is the recommendation? Here I didn't put it in bold, unfortunately. But I think it's in this part that's in blue at the end. That's effectively where the recommendation was. So the point was that the early warnings from GAC helped the applicants improve their applications and chances of success, either by ensuring that potential conflicts with public policy or public interest were avoided, that contentious cases could be withdrawn and there with reimbursement of 80% of the application cost of the applicant, or that PICs were included to increase likelihood of consumer protection. So the conclusion was that clear and timely early warning advice from GAC helped applicants to avoid potential public policy problems, correct national or legal problems, or allow withdrawal of an application and therefore recuperation of a significant portion of the application fee and the avoidance of any future costs. And it also helped to improve the acceptability and viability of the, as someone's changed that to future applications, and not future applications, it's the TLD itself. So I take just the example of .gmbh. For which there were about 6 different applicants, and Germany made an early warning GAC advice saying .gmbh has to meet certain legal criteria. So anyone using .gmbh should ensure that their registrants are legally eligible to use this legal notion. It's like LLC, for example, in the United States. So if you wanted to use LLC, you would want to make sure that something that was calling itself an LLC really did have the legal ability and requirement to do that. So that was the kind of thing that was made in the early warning and helped the applicant ensure that its registrants met certain criteria. It didn't have anything to do with whether the application went through or not, or whether one particular applicant was successful or not. But it's clear that it helped to improve the quality of the TLD once it was delegated. So to that extent, the recommendation is that in any future expansion of the GTLD, GAC early warning advice should provide clear, actionable, and timely advance warning to potential applicants, or advance advice, I guess is the word. And then someone said they didn't like that, so they didn't see why we should include that, because this was a recommendation to GAAP. But it is a recommendation to GAAP, but it's also a recommendation to the future TDP group to make sure that in developing any new version of the GTLDs, they ensure that either GAAP early warning device, as it is done even better and with learning all the errors of the past, or it's done in a slightly different way. I don't care how it's done, but it's clear that it's necessary, useful, and avoids problems for potential applicants and for potential TLDs, particularly with respect to consumer protection. So that's really what the very last paragraph is. Those are, I guess, really the recommendations.
So those are your findings, it seems, as opposed to recommendations. In other words, your finding is that the program largely works.
Yes, and the recommendation is that it continues, and that the errors or problems that arose in the past be clarified in the applicant guidebook and go forward.
Okay,
so
Calvin, do you have any? Oh, go ahead. Megan, go ahead.
Okay, am I?
Sure,
yeah,
go ahead.
What I find interesting is particularly in the geo sphere, and that's based on personal experiences. You guys might know about the whole of Africa litigation and so forth. There doesn't seem to be any place for governments to object formally to an application, or at least in the current process, I'm not sure where that would take place. I mean, one would think that GAAP advice might, a GAAP early warning would be construed as such, but is there any formal way for a government to actually object to a geo application as per the guidebook?
There was a whole section in the guidebook on geo applications, and I've forgotten now exactly what it said, but again, I can use a specific example of .swift, which was applied for by Swiss Airlines, and the Swiss Confederation made an application under GAAP early warning, not an application, they provided GAAP early warning advice, saying, sorry, .swift is not limited to the Swiss Airlines company. This is a reference to the Swiss Confederation, and please don't do it, and therefore .swift withdrew. Now, I've forgotten the exact details. But did I not put it down in one of the examples? I have a feeling I did. Maybe I didn't put it in the examples. I have it probably in my old notes, but that was also a good example. Ah, yes, here it is. There it is. It's on, I don't know what page this is. It's the penultimate page, and it's the penultimate paragraph in that page. On the dot
okay,
Swiss page, which is a clear paragraph.
There you go, yes. Yes, I got it.
Okay. So that was a specific geographic case. And the one was withdrawn following that GAAP early warning advice from the Swiss Confederation.
Sure. Now, if they hadn't withdrawn it and they'd continued with that, where would the Swiss Federation have issued the objection, the formal objection to the geo application?
I think they would have had to go to dispute resolution under legal names, because if the Swiss Confederation owns .swift as a trademark, or a legally binding name, then I suppose they would have had to go to that process, through that process, the dispute resolution process. Because there was a process for legal rights as well. I didn't talk about those. Because for me, those were relatively clear and straightforward. If you have a legal right, it's a purely legal case. It wasn't so much related to the name, the way in which the GLP was proposed, et cetera, et cetera.
Yeah, you see, in the guidebook it actually says that they shouldn't have more than two objections shouldn't have two or more objections. I think it is. I'm not sure the exact language, but something like that. So how do those objections get lodged?
Folks, this is Jonathan. I feel like we're getting into very specific weeds, unfortunately, in the document, and that's what needed to happen prior to this call. So I'm hoping, Megan, you can take these comments and in the margins, et cetera, and incorporate them into your new draft and pull the recommendations out separately and get this back in front of Calvin for to see if his questions are answered. I think part of the challenge now is that the document's so marked up and things. Because we need to move on to the safeguards recommendations.
No, indeed. But on Calvin's questions, I think the staff have to ask. I don't know. I'm not at all an expert in all these details.
Right.
I just look at these specific cases to try to get an idea of how the process is. So to go back and look at the individual cases of how many times the objections were allowed, I don't know. I think Elisa perhaps knows that, or some of her colleagues know that in much more detail. That might be the way to resolve some of those.
Calvin, can you reach out to Elisa and Jean-Baptiste offline for the answer to that specific question? But we'll assume that Megan's going to turn this document around in clean format relatively soon, and then you can see if the other questions you have still raised to the raised to the top.
Yeah, I'll wait for the clean document.
Okay. Thanks, Megan.
Okay.
Drew and Laureen, do you want to dive into the recommendations of the safeguards document or any questions that were raised in the findings? Thanks.
Okay. Yes, Happy New Year, everyone. So given our short amount of time, we have about a half hour left, I'm going to first dive right into the impact of safeguards document and the recommendations in there, because we have not yet, as a group on the call, gone over these. And then with the remaining time, I'll give you a brief update on the modifications to the recommendations in the voluntary picks document. But just quick FYI, in case we don't get there, those are just my best efforts to encapsulate the consensus areas that were reached in our last phone call and to put them in the new format so you can look at those on your own and provide feedback, worst case, if we don't get there. And then very briefly, before I jump into the impact of safeguards document, I just wanted to point out that Jean-Baptiste has added our new DNS abuse chapter to the master document. He did that earlier this week, and so that is also there for you to read over. And that is a placeholder because we do not have the DNS abuse study data yet, and so therefore at this time the document does not include recommendations, but in case you have any feedback on what's factually stated there or on the formatting or anything else, then definitely provide that over email. So for the impact of safeguards document, which is yes, the one that is highlighted, I'm looking at the wrong screen. Yes, all right, here we are. Okay, so for this, this document focuses on the safeguards that were implemented that were specific to the new GTLD program. It does not include all of them. Some will be included in the DNS abuse chapter, which has specific technical safeguards. But between those two chapters, this will include everything, all the safeguards somehow tied to the new GTLD program. And so going through these, there are recommendations at the end of each section based on our findings thus far. And so these recommendations need to be put into the new format, which will be helpful in helping us determine which party should be responsible for implementing it and goals for success and whatnot. But I'll bring your attention to the first two recommendations that are listed under the section that discusses who is verification. And so the first recommendation is, given our findings about the relatively large number of who is related complaints received by ICANN contract compliance, shout out to Jamie now, we recommend that ICANN organization analyze complaints to identify the subject matter of the complaint. And this means the subject matter being whether the subject matter was about syntax, the operability, or identity. And then we also state that they should identify other potential data sources of who is complaints, dealing with registrars, registries, ISPs, et cetera, and attempt to obtain anonymized data from these sources. If identity is a significant percentage of complaints, then consult with stakeholders to explore proceeding with the identity phase of the ARS project, because we have not, as a community, we have not yet reached the identity phase of the ARS project. And so that's finding one. And so let me see if I have any hands with regard to that one. Does anybody have any feedback or anything they want to type about that? Okay, and can we use the voting method to just see if we agree with that? And it will, of course, be put in the new format. But could you please use the check boxes so that we can determine consensus? Okay. And Laureen, I'm going to assume you agree. Okay, yep, you now have voted. Still waiting for votes from Dayan, Wado, Kylie, and Calvin. And if you don't agree, then do the disagree X. Oh, Wado, not sure what ARS is. The ARS project is detailed in part in this section as well as in the DNS abuse placeholder. And so that project is what has been looking at who is accuracy. And so there are different aspects to the project looking at, for example, who is syntax proper and being complied with. And so sampling who is records to determine whether or not a phone number is the correct number of digits, addresses are in the correct format, et cetera. And as well as operability so far to ensure that when you're querying who is information about a domain name, you're able to actually receive a response. And so therefore you're ensuring that registry operators are not blocking all who is queries or whatnot, or that registrars, as they're collecting the information from registrants, are failing to, are failing to even scrutinize the syntax of the information being provided to them, et cetera. What has been proposed in the past, but what has not been done yet by the accuracy reporting system, is getting to the point of actually determining whether identities are valid in any way. And so there are different ways you could go about that, different layers of it. But essentially, today, as long as the syntax is correct, you could put a fake name, fake phone number, and maybe the country code has to be a real country code and things like that, but it might not be your real phone number. You could put all that stuff, and there wouldn't be anything done to verify that that is the actual identity of the registrant. And then Laureen just pasted a great link to the who is ARS. So that's that. So Wado, feel free to provide any feedback after looking over that. But that's essentially that. So we're saying that we actually propose there being a little more data collected before moving on and assessing whether or not they should proceed with the identity project. And then recommendation two here is that given the existing efforts on WHOIS accuracy, determine whether the ARS team could assess whether WHOIS syntax and operability accuracy has increased under the 2013 RAA. And this is because the obligations under the 2013 RAA were imposed, actually imposed obligations on operators to verify this. And so we're giving this recommendation to see if it actually did, in fact, have that effect of increasing such accuracy for those two things. Does anybody have any feedback on that?
Hey, Drew, it's Jamie. I've had my hand up. I don't know if you've seen
it. Oh, I apologize. All the green check boxes. It wasn't just because you're compliant I was ignoring you, I can assure you. And congratulations, by the way. Yes, Jamie.
Thank you. So on the first one, it seems it might be a little unclear about what you mean by other sources of complaints, other potential data sources of WHOIS complaints. Registrars and registries are the recipient of complaint, or they're responsible for resolving complaints. So it's not clear. Are you suggesting that they would also offer complaints?
So I'm going to invite Laureen to chime in after I speak on this because she was the pen holder for this chapter. But because potentially complaints, particularly those dealing with operability or something, could come from any type of source. And so that is what we're aiming for in that. And as I mentioned, we'll definitely work this into the new format for recommendations. I think that will provide clarity. But Laureen, would you like to chime in about that?
Sure. Can everyone hear me? Yes?
Yes.
Okay, good. So, Jamie, I want to make sure I understood your question because the reference here was to consider other data sources, and then there was a specification that registrars and registries and perhaps ISPs and potentially I would think law enforcement and members of the public may also have, but this would be an identification of other potential data sources that might be rich sources of WHOIS complaints. So even though I'm making this long list that might include more granular entities like individuals, I think the real task would be what are going to be rich data sources of WHOIS complaints. Where are the places where a lot of this information lives? And so registrars and registries seem to be some of the sources where one would expect to find this information.
Thank you, that's helpful. I'm still a little confused though, because if it's a WHOIS complaint, it goes to ICANN.
Well, I understand that if it's a WHOIS complaint, it goes to ICANN. That's the place it's supposed to go. But my sense is it's not the only place that folks receive these complaints, that there could be other potential data sources. In fact, my sense is that although people within the ICANN ecosystem are very well-versed in where these complaints should go. In fact, a lot of the rest of the world doesn't know the right place to complain to. In fact, we see that in our, you know, in our Nielsen survey, that people often complain to law enforcement or they complain to other sources. And so this recommendation is trying to account for the sort of should-be world, i.e. these complaints should all go to one place, they should go to ICANN, but more the reality that, in fact, these complaints may be going to disparate sources, and it would be useful to identify what the richest of these disparate sources might be so that information can be taken into account.
Okay, and maybe I'm just being taken. I understand what you're getting at, and who is complaint is something that, you know, sort of by its terms goes to ICANN, right? There is a complaint that, or at least many may see it that way. What I think you're talking about is claims of who is inaccuracy that don't go to ICANN. I don't have an objection to the recommendation, but it might be worth sort of clarifying what it is you mean, because people may be confused about or not understand that you're talking about claims of inaccuracy that don't become who is complaints to ICANN. If that makes sense.
Yes. Okay. I think I hear what you're saying. You're asking for some. Because there is a structure set up to where complaints should go, and this is basically acknowledging that they may not necessarily go to the place we want them to, we should clarify that there's this existing mechanism so that we don't inadvertently create confusion. Am I understanding it right?
Yeah, that's it. And then also, what will help clarify that is suggesting ways in which the identification of these sources could be made. Is it, you know, reaching out to these individuals? Is it a survey? Is it, you know, how is it done?
That makes sense.
And then, Drew, under number two, the only question I had is the improved under the RA, under the 213 RAA over what?
Over pre 2013 RAA, so those not under the 2013 RAA.
Okay. Again, it might be helpful to clarify that.
Absolutely.
You're talking about all prior, or just the last, the 2009, whatever.
Right. Yeah. Okay. Good point. So we can do the most recent, the 2009 RAA. Okay. Does anybody else have any more feedback before we move on to the next couple of recommendations? And does anybody oppose either of these recommendations? Looks like we have consensus for both with the modifications to clarify them both. Okay. And, Jamie, that's an old hand, correct?
Yes, it is. Sorry.
Okay, no problem. Okay, so then moving on, here's a safeguard on mitigating abuse activity, which placed requirements on the operators to actually, in not a completely specific way, but basically to do something, to investigate, respond appropriately to any reports of abuse. And so from this, we came up with three recommendations. And so the first of which is, in light of the important goals of these safeguards to mitigate abusive activity, continue to gather data comparing rates of abuse in domains under the new registry agreement and registrar agreements to legacy GTLDs. And so that's something where we're going to have a bit more insight once we get the DNS abuse data for that. And I'll read through all three of them, and then we can discuss them. Number two, determine whether it's possible to draw any conclusions about the impact of individual safeguards on rates of abuse. And this is, once again, where we're going to be looking at what correlations we may or may not be able to draw and whether we can go further than a correlation once we have that DNS abuse data. And three, survey registrars to find out whether the safeguard has made a difference in the way they approach combating abuse and find out how registrars interpret their obligation to take reasonable and prompt steps to respond appropriately to reports of abuse. And so there are some comments already in the document about some of these parts, but going back to the first recommendation that's focused on comparing the rates of abuse amongst TLDs that are under and registrars under these new policies versus those under the old policies, does anybody have any feedback on that one? Brian, I see your hand. Brian, we can't hear you if you're talking. Oh, hey.
Yeah. Hello. Thanks, Drew. I just a minor sort of suggestion to maybe strengthen the language a bit on two, and rather than saying determine whether it's possible to draw any conclusions about impacts, maybe just say assess impact of individual safeguards, something like that, or study impact, something like that. So that's my two cents.
Thanks, Brian. That sounds good to me. Okay, so that was for two. All right, does anybody, so it seems like no one had anything so far on one, but you can definitely chime in as we're talking about the other things. So then two, does anyone have any other feedback other than Brian's about tweaking the language? And, of course, all three of these will go into the new format, and the language will be tweaked accordingly for that. But does anybody disagree or strongly agree or have any other feedback on these recommendations for one, two, or three now? And, Brian, is that an old hand? Guessing it's an old hand. Okay. So for the third one, Aliza, I believe it was Aliza maybe, who in the document had a comment to the point of, and to find out how registrars interpret the obligation to take reasonable steps. And so her comment, I don't know if I'm seeing the comment I'm thinking of. Seeing she had a comment that, yes, okay, I found it. She said it is unclear what value this data would provide to registrars provide an answer to this question. What would be the action based upon their responses? And so the data that could come out of this would be seeing if there truly are disparate interpretations of this to the point that maybe it's not accomplishing the goal of enhancing abuse mitigation, which would then lead to community discussions that could strengthen the language or just make the language more specific in a way. Or it could be that we find out that it may be in a good way there's diversity of interpretation that actually leads to different approaches that are all focused on mitigating abuse and that really would fit into a category of reasonable and prompt steps. But anyway, it's to peel back the onion a little and actually get some more data about what that means in practice versus just what it means on the paper. And so I'm wondering if anyone has any feedback on that. And then after I hear any feedback on that, then I'll read Jamie's comment from the chat. Do you think they have any feedback on this one? Is everyone still okay with it and understands that explanation to the feedback provided? And like I said, we will put this in the new format, and then it'll become more specific wording on our part as a recommendation. Okay, well, moving on to Jamie's point, which is actually relevant to this one, even though it's also relevant to others, Jamie's pointing out that, of course, the contracted parties are not required to report information such as this, or this type of information, and may refuse to do so, and that getting this type of data is always dependent on the willingness of the party with the data, and that's definitely a good point, but that doesn't mean that the community shouldn't try. But to Jamie's point, perhaps if anyone has any other recommendations of other data sources we could add in addition to attempts to get this type of data, because we can't assume that we're going to get this data, as we learned from this past year with all kinds of data we've wanted. So Jamie, while you are typing to provide further feedback on that, I'm just going to check one last time with the group if does anybody oppose these three recommendations in general? Otherwise, I'm going to assume we have consensus and then move on to the next part, the next recommendations, because we only have a few minutes left. Okay, thanks, Jamie. Okay, so for the next section, we have one recommendation with regard to the security checks, and it's that once completed, ICANN and community stakeholders should review the proposed registry operator framework and assess whether the framework is sufficiently clear, effective, and enforceable, and an enforceable mechanism to mitigate abuse by providing for specified actions in response to security threats. And this is one where, as we tweak this recommendation, we can put define it a bit better as to what we mean by enforceable, because it is a framework, but you know, we can change that language a bit to reflect the fact that it is a framework, but to still put in place how the framework is I guess implemented. Is it, you know, a mechanism for which you can ensure that it is implemented? And so what this focuses on is, of course, the registry operator's obligation to conduct periodic security checks, so that we make sure they are doing those periodic security checks and find out more about that. So does anybody have any feedback on that one? I see a couple people typing for this one. And I don't see any hands right now, but feel free to chime in if anyone wanted to speak as well. Otherwise, I'll see what people are typing for that one.
Drew, this is Maureen.
Okay, I'm going to put myself
on
mute. Aliza?
I'm in the car, so I can't raise my hand. Maureen, you can go ahead if you were first.
You go ahead first, Aliza.
Thank you. So I had a question about this, and I'm not sure if it made it into the draft that's in the screen now, since I'm not in front of the screen. I was wondering, specifically in terms of the word enforceable, this is the voluntary framework recommendation, I think, that we're talking about. It's voluntary. So is the word enforceable meant to be for ICANN to enforce, or is that referring to the registry's ability to enforce its framework? That was my question. Thanks.
So, Aliza, this is Laureen. I actually think this is a very well-founded comment. It is a voluntary framework, and enforcement is reflection, this is a very apt comment, that is the wrong word, and we probably should take out the word enforceable, and I think keep clear and effective, because I think that's the key. Is any proposed framework going to be, you know, have sufficient clarity and specificity so that it actually can be implemented? I think enforceable probably would raise a lot of red flags when the whole intent is for this to be a voluntary framework. That said, if it's so, if it lacks specificity and if it lacks clarity, then it will really have a limited usefulness. So I think those are the concepts we should focus on.
Thanks, that makes sense.
Okay, so we will adjust that, and then both Megan and Jamie have feedback. So okay, so yes, to Megan's point, this is part of what I'm alluding to as you put things in the format, is that we'll definitely be more specific with who we are directing the recommendations to, and not just say ICANN as some general vague thing. So thank you for reiterating that, because that's very, very important, of course, for making these recommendations meaningful, however well-intended they may be. If we aren't specific, then they will likely not go anywhere. Okay, and then Jamie's point echoes what was just said about our need to focus on what's actually enforceable versus what is not enforceable, and change our language accordingly with that recommendation dealing with the registry operator framework. So that is duly noted. All right, so people are starting to drop, and we only have a few, or we're out of time. For those willing to stay on, I will go over the rest of the recommendations, at least in this document. And then for voluntary picks, I urge you to read those on your own and tell me if we should change anything before that becomes part of our draft or our first draft report. So, and let's see, moving on, we have two recommendations in this section that details making and handling complaints, focusing on the base registry agreement for new GTLDs. So the first recommendation is to survey registries to find out the volume of complaints they receive, both from the public and from government agencies. And number two is to assess whether mechanisms to report and handle complaints has led to more focused efforts to combat abuse by surveying registries to find out what actions they take in response to complaints. And so to the first one, of course, a criticism will be, oh, well, how do we, you know, what if they don't respond? They don't have to respond and whatnot. I still think it's a worthwhile exercise, especially having had experience of actually surveying registries and registrars for my own organization about abuse complaints and what they do. And so I still think it's a worthwhile effort to do this in an anonymous way and to better understand this volume of complaints, because this, of course, helps inform decision-making about abuse policies and whether or not they are effective. So does anybody have any feedback about that? Once again, that needs to be more specific as far as who it's directed at and whatnot. But this is in response to the requirements in the base registry agreement, coupled with the data we got from our own surveys about people being, many people not being aware as to who to go for complaints. And then, of course, we always hear in the community with regard to abuse that abuse reporting often can be misdirected. It's something that should go to a content provider, does not, and vice versa. and things that should go to ICANN might not always land there. Does anybody disagree with the first recommendation or feedback? I don't think we have quorum to judge whether we have consensus, so that will have to be done via email. But for recommendation two, assess whether mechanisms to report and handle complaints has led to more focused efforts to combat abuse. By undertaking the survey, does anybody have any feedback on that? Okay, well, we'll go to email to ultimately see if we have consensus on those after we've reworded those in the new format. And for those still on the line, continuing on with the document, I'm going to go to the next three recommendations, which these recommendations are under the safeguards for sensitive and regulated string section. We're losing ICANN compliance, which means that anything we say about ICANN compliance will no longer have opposition. So now that should get some feedback from the remaining people. These three recommendations are include more detailed information on subject matter of complaints in ICANN publicly available compliance reports. And so this is something I would definitely want Jamie's feedback on, of course. So maybe once again, this would be something better suited for email, because I think that would be really helpful to get the compliance take on that. But this is something where I think for us, not only doing the review, but just from our findings, it seems like it could be a lot more helpful to the extent that compliance could be more specific on the subject matter. I think that would be helpful for the community understanding where the problems really are, rather than them being, lumped so generally in scope. And so that's how we came up with this recommendation, because we would like to know what these complaints really look at. Is there a specific law that someone's alleging is being violated? And then do these complaints relate to any of these newer things, such as these obligations for the protection of sensitive health and financial information? And so all of that would really help reflect the reality of the new safeguards and the compliance issues or compliance obligations that have arisen with that. And then number two in this section is a recommendation to survey registrars to determine whether they are complying with the obligation to provide appropriate security measures for this sensitive health and financial information. And three, to follow up any survey that's conducted with an audit to assess whether registrars are sufficiently protecting users' sensitive information. So once again, going with these new obligations. So does anybody have any feedback on that? Okay, and once again, that'll just be done via email, and I'm thinking we'll just have to end the call soon because we're getting fewer and fewer people. For those of you still on the line, though, as far as review team members, Calvin, Jonathan, Kylie, Wado, Dayan, Jamie looks like still hanging on. We have just this final set, or maybe a few more sets of recommendations. So since we are now almost 10 minutes over, I guess we could go ahead and take this offline. But this is dealing once again with more surveys to registries, registrants, and whatnot, and focus on complaints and getting to the heart of learning more about complaints. So Laureen and I will go ahead and put these in the new format and then shoot these back out to the group so that way we can get broader feedback on them. But for those of you still on the line, I urge you to go through and read these and provide any feedback even on the spirit of them before we go through and put them in the new format to see if you flat out disagree or have feedback as to how they can be better as we put them in the new format. I'm just going to go ahead and close there since we're so far over and so few minutes left. So I'll yield it to you, Jonathan, and anyone else can chime in the chat or to you in your closing remarks.
Thanks, Drew. Sorry to push you so far toward the end there. So, folks, if you make an effort when these links are recirculated in Google Doc format to take a look and make comments in line so that we can talk about them as efficiently as possible on the next call. So let's try to raise to the surface issues that might be controversial and make sure that we have a targeted discussion of these when next they're raised, because we are coming up against our deadlines, which are the next topic of the agenda. But at this point, with only half the people, I don't know if it makes sense to go over them, unless Jean-Baptiste, you want to just take, you know, 30 seconds here and remind us of some of the deadlines that we set for ourselves in terms of the release of this to the public so that people are aware of the urgency.
Yes, Jonathan, I think we are running out of time, but what I wanted to remind everyone is to send their comments by the end of this week, because if we still plan on publishing the draft report for public comment on the 23rd, we need a lot of time internally to format the report. So so please send your comments by the end of this week.
Thanks, JB. In case people didn't hear, the end of the week here is the deadline for your comments. So remember that we'll be releasing this for public comment, and you will all be part of the process of defending the document in the environment of public commenting. So please do take another round of looks at the documents and get your comments in by the end of the week. Beyond that, we'll get out the agenda for the next plenary call, which will include the executive summary as well as the data-based summary. So, Laureen and Drew, I'm looking forward to you to supplement the draft that Stan prepared on the competition side with things that you want to add in terms of the data requests, and at which point I will try to take the pen and formulate that into something cogent. So please do take a look at the document that Stan circulated and supplement it with data requests that would come out of compliance. All right, folks.
And
thank you very much.
Wait, Jonathan, just maybe we can talk offline, because I'm not sure I have full clarity on what the ask is here. So maybe you and I just you and I and Drew can chat about that.
Definitely. Let's set up a call to do that.
Okay.
All right, folks. Thanks a lot.
Thanks. Bye.